Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. Welcome to the House at 1229 and an important edition of the Washington AI Network podcast, because we have a very special guest who's on the front lines of physical AI. Please join me in welcoming Deepu Talla, NVIDIA's... Wait, you haven't heard his title. You already know who he is. Vice President General Manager of Robotics and Edge AI. Deepu has been at NVIDIA for over a decade, right?
That's right.
Okay. He's leading NVIDIA's work deploying AI in the manufacturing industry with industrial automation, AI-powered robots, increasingly changing how warehouses, factories, and really all of life is going to operate. This is a rare opportunity to hear directly from one of those influential leaders shaping the future of robotics and edge AI. Okay, let's hear it for him.
Thanks, Tammy, that's probably the best part. I don't know I can keep up to that.
I think you will have no problem. All right, talk to us about how AI is changing robotics.
So if you think about physical AI, the physical world is extremely challenging, right? Because the safety needs, the accuracy that's needed in order to be safe is extremely high. And if you look at the last 50 years of robotics and automation, it's pretty much been relegated to what we call high volume, fixed kind of tasks. And they're all pre-programmed robots. Much of the action actually is in small and medium enterprises where there's labor shortage, where there is dangerous jobs, you have to lift heavy things or work in dangerous environments. So you want robotics ultimately to solve that problem. But largely, the reason why we haven't succeeded yet is the technology has not caught up. The technology to solve these difficult problems does not exist. Until very recently, there's two big technology breakthroughs that have happened that gives us hope for the next 5 to 10 years, we might be able to solve some of these problems. And the first one, of course, is who here uses ChatGPT? Everyone, right? Can you believe it? ChatGPT is not even 3 years old. Can you imagine the world before ChatGPT? So the reason ChatGPT really took off, I think there's actually two reasons. One, it is a general purpose AI model. It was not good for just doing one thing. It could do many, many different things. That's the first time it's become a general purpose AI. The second one that a lot of people don't talk about is so easy to use. Anybody can use it, right? You don't have to be a programmer. You don't have to be a scientist. Any human could use it. So now the whole world is on the similar quest for, can we create a ChatGPT for the physical world? So if we can create that, then robots can maybe be used for general purpose things. So that's the first piece of technology that has matured, that's giving us a chance. The second one, it's actually amazing. How do you build and test robots in the physical world? I mean, today the way it's done is you build a physical robot, you program it, and then you test it. There's a problem with it. Actually, there's three problems. It's not fast, it's not safe, it's too expensive. How many robots can you build without knowing if it's going to work? So that's been a big problem. And then the moment you're operating in our world, physical world, it's on wall clock time, right? You want to be able to do 1,000 times faster if you can. And of course, safety. So you want to be able to build and test robots in simulation if possible. The idea of simulation is not new. Many industries simulate things before you build it. But in robotics, the problem has been what's called the sim to real gap. So what you build and test in simulation, if it's not the same as what it's going to be in the real world, then why would you use it? It's not good enough. So that gap has been closing. It's not closed completely yet, but it's become reasonably good enough, such that because of these two technologies reasonably maturing, now we have a chance of solving some of these problems which we've known for 10, 20, 30, 50 years.
So how do you do this simulation? Because ChatGPT is, let's put all this information in, all the LLMs, where do you get the information?
Yeah, it's a good question. So if you think of a robot, there's actually 4 steps, I think. Let's walk backwards from the destination to the beginning, right? The 4th step, of course, is you want to deploy the robot, right? The physical robot. The physical robot has a brain, just like a human would, if you would imagine it. And you have to run software, you have to run autonomy capability. You have to do lots of things in real time, energy efficient, safety, all those have to happen. So that's the deployment. And that's an extremely hard problem. But before you deploy, you have to test it, right? And testing in robotics, if we can move it to simulation, we can do it 1,000, if not 1,000,000 times faster, safer, and cheaper. So that's the third step. Now, before you test it, you have to train it. And training is something that's reasonably well understood now in the whole world because the whole AI industry has been training ChatGPT or equivalents of those large language models and other models. So we have capabilities to train it. Now, this the first step before training. Training is the second step, right? So deployment, testing, training. But before training, there's one step that's needed, and that's extremely hard for robotics compared to ChatGPT. How was ChatGPT trained?
Fei-Fei Li had all those young people do it, started there, right?
Well, I mean, in order to train something for AI, the fuel is data, right? In the case of ChatGPT, guess what? Whole humanity, we created the internet for the last 30 years. So all the data, all the language, all the books that humanity has created for thousands of years has been somehow captured in that, right?
Right.
And so the data existed. I'm not saying it's easy. It's easier now, but data existed. But for robotics, where's the data? You go and take all the YouTube videos, let's say, and everything that's available. You might get a reasonably okay dancing robot, but would you get a robot that would really be good for healthcare, surgical robot? No, I wouldn't bring it anywhere close. Or even manufacturing. You want a human around it, especially these robots are 1,000 pounds. Some of these robots' arms that you see, right? Safety is super important. So we have a problem. We need to have data. But then you say, okay, whole of internet data is not enough. It's needed, but not enough. Then you say, okay, let me go and collect data. So I'm going to hire a bunch of people. I can put an Apple Vision Pro or TeleOp, and then you can collect data, or you can do what's called imitation learning. You show it, and you do all of that real world. The answer is all of that real world is necessary, but not sufficient. Because in the case of ChatGPT, let's say, what's your favorite application for ChatGPT? What do you use it for?
To tell me something that I don't know.
Okay, that's fantastic. Is it 100% accurate?
No. Do I care? No.
Sorry. But that's beauty, right? The accuracy is improving, but you as a human know whatever it's giving, if it's not quite right, is good enough that you take it and you refine it.
Right.
Right? Let's say it went from 90% accuracy to 95. That's a big help for you, and that's good enough. As a human, you can clean it up from 95 to 100. In the case of robotics, the accuracy is how many nines do you need after 99 point decimal?
Oh.
Because if you make a mistake in the physical world, there's no human to fix it many a time.
Right, right.
And there could be physical damage done, and it's can be catastrophic. So the accuracy requirement is super high, and that's why robotics, physical AI has been such a challenge. So you collect data, you do all of that. Okay, we say that's necessary, but not sufficient. Then you say, okay, then where is the data coming from? So this technology called synthetic data generation, can we use AI itself now? Can we use simulation technologies to take some real-world examples and create many variations of that data? For example, if I did this, you could probably use AI to do different trajectories. I only did one example, but right. You can show it many different ways of doing it. You can change the lighting, you can change the environment, you can change the size of the glass, the shape of the glass. You can change many different things and create 1,000 times more data or 1,000,000 times more data. And the hope with all of this is the more data you create, that's good data, then you can train this general purpose brain. So that's kind of where we are. The best in the world right now are trying to create a reasonably good general purpose brain. Mm-hmm. And to create that brain, they need data. And we are helping the world create that data that then you can create this reasonably good general purpose brain.
I know NVIDIA does not actually build robots, but you're working with all of these folks that are doing it and helping them. Can we talk specifically about the humanoid robot? Although I got to say, I like the camo dogs. Did you guys see those at the Army parade? The camo dogs, robots? Nobody watched that? I thought it was great. But let's talk about the humanoid robot, because I think that's where people, especially when you're talking about workforce, see the best opportunity.
Yeah. it's quite likely that humanoids will be the largest opportunity for humanity. I mean, growing up, I used to watch Star Wars and Star Trek, and I think everything that needs to be done in robotics was kind of there. The vision always was there. And one of the reasons I think humanoids could be is they're going to be general purpose. And much of the world is what we call brownfield, right? We built the world in the last 200, 300 years for humans, and it's brownfield. And humans are excellent at unstructured environments. We don't need to be programmed. We'll figure out if there's something blocking us. We know exactly what it is naturally. So having a humanoid form factor makes logical sense because we built the world around our form factor for the last 200, 300 years. So that's why it's phenomenal. Not only that, because now you have a general purpose form factor, if you create a good enough brain, we can take that brain and we can then what's called fine tune or distill it into multiple embodiments. The reality is in the future, there's probably going to be robots of all shapes and sizes. Some of them are going to be task specific because not everything needs two legs. Probably in many cases, wheels is better than legs. Of course, what happens if you want to fly? You don't need legs. You need different things, right? Or if you're underwater, there's going to be all sorts. But humanoids provide us the best opportunity to create that general purpose brain. And that's kind of what I personally am most excited by. And because ultimately, we're all going to live a lot longer, right?
Well, let's hope so.
Well, it's a given to me. Currently, the life expectancy of a human, I think, is around 74, 75 years. 25 years ago, it was like in the 60s. 50 years ago, it was in the high 50s, close to 60. Okay, and then, of course, if you go 100 years ago before medicine, it's like in the 40s, right? With all the advancements in technology and things coming, who's to say why we can't replace some of our bad cells or bad things? And
you're working on that too?
I'm not, but I always believe in my mind, I'm going to live 200 years.
That's okay? Great.
Yeah, but also the flip is, you don't want to be 200, like be 100 years old and not able to do and live 200.
Right.
But
well, that's why you play tennis. Well, we had a whole conversation.
Well, the joke, joke is I age half life. That's so. My dad, he's retired now, but he was a professor of nuclear physics, or we used to call it unclear physics. You know, right? So in nuclear, it is what's called half life. Somehow, that's the only thing I took from his thing and said, I'm going to age at half the rate.
Oh my God.
Right? So that's how I get to 200. But in any case, so humanoids, what are we going to need as a society in the future? We want to do more things in the future. So we want to have robots help us with elder care for sure, things at the home, a lot of these chores that we don't want to do, all of those someday will be solved. Is it 5, 10, or is it 15, 20? Don't know. But the good news is the best in the world are working on it now, and we have good pieces of technology that enable us. So because of that, the best in the world, you look at startups, where the funding is going. You look at the top research labs across all big companies. You look at all the top research universities. Suddenly, they've all migrated to creating a general purpose brain for physical AI and robotics.
And when you talk about the brain, are you saying that the robot is reasoning?
Exactly right. If you look at ChatGPT, when the first time it came about, it's basically a one-shot model, meaning you ask a question, boom, you get an answer because it memorized it. That's it. It was trained on large amounts of data. And as the model became bigger and bigger and bigger memory, it could basically give you back an answer. But now what's changed in the last 1 year is this thing called reasoning. So instead of giving you a one-shot answer, the model goes off and starts thinking a little bit, try to reason, and then takes time and comes back with hopefully a better answer. Although in some cases, if you give me 1 hour instead of 5 minutes, I might come with a worse answer. AI does the same thing sometimes, right? So just like we do, humans do reasoning, AI does reasoning, not exactly in the same way. I don't think it's the same way. It's still more pattern recognition based. That's what AI is. Have you all heard of this interesting thing of a Moravec paradox? Have you heard of this? Anybody heard of this? Basically, it's an observation by this scientist made in the 1980s. It's actually a simple observation you all make. What's easy for humans to do is tough for robots to do. What's easy for robots to do is tough for humans to do. Actually, you can test it, even before robots. I'll give you a 10-digit number by a 10-digit number and a 9-digit number multiplied. A calculator, forget AI, a calculator can do it.
Right.
Right? Or I give 24 hours of video to an AI to analyze it and come back with something versus I give 24 hours to you, you'd be so bored of watching it.
Right.
Right. So there are tasks which are monotonous, which are boring, or that involves lifting heavy things. For example, robots are good at lifting heavy weights. Those are all things robots do very well. Humans can reason, can work in unstructured environments. So if you combine those two things, which is what I think we think is going to happen increasingly, is every human in the future will be teaching or instructing or working alongside robots. And the more intelligent the robots become, you can trust it to do jobs that you don't want to do.
But unlike ChatGPT or name any of the AIs, where it's a whole system, and you're working with all of them, individual companies, researchers, et cetera, they're all doing their own thing. I see the future. I kind of like it. I like someone doing all the stuff I don't want to do. But how do you make that like across industry? Or maybe you don't need to.
No, I think we absolutely need to. In fact, what's happening today is pretty much everybody that's trying to create this general purpose brain and the quest to create this brain, they're collecting data, or they're coming with research techniques to do data collection, methodologies to train it better, to test it. From what I know, what I can see, if it's not 100%, it's 99.99% is all published. Because there is no way for any one company or one nation to do this. It's such a complicated thing. The base still is not built out yet. And so it's being collaborated in a complete open manner. And that's why it's moving faster and faster as everybody's learning from each other.
What about China? Because I'm sure we've all seen those videos of like the 1,000 robots from China all working together or not working together. Are they a threat? Are they doing it better? What's your take on how they're working on this?
Yeah, I think the two nations that are most advanced in robotics, of course, United States and China. And China has a super urgent reason why they need robots, if you think about it. What is their largest industry today? It's manufacturing. And there's labor shortage, significant labor shortage across the globe and everything, because new humans that are coming in want to do different jobs, just like, you know, my grandparents were in agriculture, but I'm not in agriculture, or my parents were not. So there's an existing industry for manufacturing. So as a result, there is enormous pressure to bring robots. That's one of the reasons why you see China aggressively going after robotics. Now, for United States, there's two things that need to happen. And I think both of them are happening. Number one, of course, the latest policy of reshoring manufacturing. And by the way, next month is going to be GTC DC, and Jensen's going to be here giving the keynote. The whole theme is going to be around manufacturing, reshoring, AI, right?
Oh, that's a little news tip for the news people in the room.
Yeah, it's going to be around manufacturing is being reshored. And you see a lot of these announcements, even just last week, when the president and the first lady met with all, and then Apple and even NVIDIA, we announced $500 billion of manufacturing over the next 4 years for our AI data centers being reshored to the United States. So a lot of reshoring is happening, which means the new age of manufacturing is going to come to the US.
Right.
Secondly, you also need technology for that to happen. A lot of the existing manufacturing, if you look at it, where automation has taken shape, has been only in high volume, low mix. So if you really look at
does that mean?
High volume means you're producing something at extremely high volume. Low mix means you're only producing one or two things. Okay. Like, for example, you look at the last 50 years, there's only really two industries where this happened. One, you can all guess, automotive manufacturing, because every year it's one car model. You spit it out exactly. And so the way people solved that problem was they build the factory to be structured because you know exactly what's going to come when. You know where to put each robot. And you can program the robot because you're building a car for a full year and it's high volume. So your return on investment, there's a payback. So you did it. And you only build that car. And the second industry that robotics has been deployed in the last 30 years is high volume electronics manufacturing. So if you're building a television, if you're building a smartphone, but there's this good action in those two things, but a lot of action actually is in what we call SME, right? Small and medium enterprises. And there's no robots that are deployed in small and medium enterprises because it's high mix, low volume, and you can't program those robots. It's too expensive to maintain. It's not easy to use. So now with this technology that we talked about, all of this, you know, general purpose brain and the ease of use, and just like how easy it is to use ChatGPT, robotics instruction should be do this, literally, right? That's kind of what we need to get to. So because of that, I think the golden age of manufacturing for the United States has started over the next 5, 10, 20 years. I think we'll see a lot of, not just the high volume, but pretty much in every industry, which is what's needed.
So you're saying the U.S. and China are totally competitive. They're not really ahead. They just need to work more on it because they need it.
Yeah, I think everybody needs it, right? At the end of the day, if you look at the last 20 years, a lot of our manufacturing has moved into other nations.
Mm-hmm.
With the policy change to bring a lot of manufacturing, starting with high volume first, and robotics solving this ultimate problem of small and medium general purpose robotics, the opportunity to manufacture not just cars and not just electronics, but many other things in the United States, I think it's a leveling the playing field, if you will, because at some point robots will become more and more efficient, and then you will need humans absolutely to instruct them to work alongside them. And the productivity and the throughput will significantly increase. I actually genuinely believe that it's going to completely change the trajectory of how United States manufacturing happens in the next 20 years.
That's amazing. I like that.
Yeah.
I wonder how you handle the changes every day that we read about. And I'm sure you know about some of it before it's in, you know, Axios or the Times or anyone that's here. But we're reading about these systems change. So one is the policies have changed for the United States. But as you're designing these systems, they're changing it in real time. How do you do that?
Yeah, and that's the nature of the beast, right? So being alert and constantly on the cutting edge of technology and evolving has been the mantra for us as a company for the last 10, if not 15 years. The good news is, most of the work is done in world-leading research labs and universities. Most of them publish. That's how you get
to know the work. They're probably on the phone with you all the time, telling you what's going on, right?
Well, partly on the phone, but also they're publishing it openly because it's such a rush in trying to create it. You know, if you think about robotics and physical AI problems, I think we're still in the first innings of a baseball game, if you will.
I have to ask everyone from NVIDIA this question, and I'm hoping you will give me the answer. John is already staring at me. What is the craziest thing any company, any individual, any research university, maybe Helen here, offered you in the other room to get the GPUs they want or need?
Well, I don't think anybody has offered, but clearly...
Like Taylor Swift tickets... You know, front row of the Sphere. I don't know what you would want, but we could get you into the White House or, you know.
We just want them to do great work. So we tried.
Yeah. So no one's tried to like, hey, Deepu, will you help us? Blah, blah, blah. Call Jensen and get me
that. That absolutely is. That happens all the time with respect to how can we get access to more compute. And we are constantly working on that. And increasingly, we have released our new products, the latest products. That are increasingly available. And the thing is this, the job is so difficult to create a general purpose brain. The amount of compute you have to throw at it, we're still in the very early innings of it. And that's why you see everybody wanting to get there faster and sooner. So as a result of that, you just want to try out so many different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you can try out all these ideas is you got to train the model. To train the model, you need compute. You need to generate data. To generate data,
you need energy. How much do you focus on the energy issues?
That probably is the most important bottleneck or design point that we look at. Power energy is relatively fixed. And that's been one of the challenges actually in the United States. If you look at the amount of energy coming online, new power grids coming online in the next 5 years in the United States is far less than what the actual demand is. Which means if that's the constraint, if your constraint is how much power can you at any given location provide to the factory, the AI factory, if you will, to train it, then it's all about what's the max performance at the lowest cost that you can deliver in that energy budget. So then it comes down to what's the architecture? How do you design all the different architecture from our GPUs to our networking to our software acceleration libraries to putting it all together and creating this software based on the ecosystem so that you can get the maximum amount of performance for that fixed budget and energy. Because remember that energy is fixed now.
Right.
And that's the quest we are on. And in the last 10 years, we've increased that by 1,000,000 times. Our latest generation Blackwell that's shipping now is 10 times compared to a previous generation for doing this.
It needs 10 times as much energy.
No, it's 10 times faster within the same energy. So the energy is fixed.
Right.
The energy is fixed. So you can't increase the energy. Whatever energy you have available, that's what you have available. Now you need to take that fixed amount of energy and increase the performance through architecture, through technology, through innovation, through software. That's what NVIDIA does. Because we can't control the energy. Whatever the energy, there's a fixed budget. But we can control or we can influence the architecture. And that's the quest we've been on. Within the same energy, give or take roughly, 1,000,000 times more compute has been delivered in the last 10 years.
I was honored to go to the GTC conference in Santa Clara earlier this year. And the thing that shocked me is there were pipe fitters from Pennsylvania. The Chevron folks were there. Students, CEOs, a lot of people you would expect, but the amount of energy people, not like, again, the big companies that were there to try to figure all this out and see, it was so incredible. And there were also two robots there that have completely entranced me and the internet, Besh and Grek, who are these droids that have emotions. Has anyone seen them? They're in Star Wars, The Mandalorian, but they have all kinds of emotions. And it's the craziest thing. They follow you like that, you know, like little cute droids. But then if you get too close, they'll get mad at you. Like they have all kinds of emotions. We haven't talked about emotions and how you get them in there, but it was Disney research with you guys that put that together. So my real question is, are you bringing them to GTC DC? Because you guys would love them.
Stay tuned, I guess. I do not know exactly what robots we'll bring, but I'm 100% sure we are bringing many robots to the expo hall at GTC DC, including for manufacturing.
Yeah, so this event, it's October 27th to the 29th, GTC DC. I went there last year. And oh, I stole a pillow because, you know, you always have to steal something when you go to an event. So you've been there for a decade or so, right? And you guys were always a successful company since you've been there, but not like the center of the universe. Do you have new friends now? Is everyone trying to be your friend or how does it work?
Well, for me, it's been almost 13 years now I've been at NVIDIA. And
wait, guys, come on now. Yeah. Robotics.
No dull moments at all. And always been fortunate to work with the best in the world at NVIDIA. And also because we are a platform company, we work with every company on the planet. So always been fortunate to work with the best in the world. Doesn't matter what, whether it's robotics, whether it's AI. My first job at NVIDIA was on smartphones, actually, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
We were creating smartphones. That was my previous job for 10 years. I worked in the phone industry to bring smartphones to the world. I guess I always been fortunate and got lucky working with the best. And, you know, I'm still grounded, always grounded, stay first principle. Mm-hmm. But the pace at which technology is moving now and the number of researchers and the developers that we, startups that we work with now, is significantly higher than what it was a few years ago. So, yeah, I mean, super excited.
That's thrilling. Well, Deepa, thank you so much for being here. Let's hear it for him. This is absolutely amazing. And thank you for participating in the Washington AI Network podcast. Please take your phones out and follow us on YouTube. Please subscribe. Thank you again.
I'll see
you at GTC DC.
GTC,
who's coming?
What?
I should come.
That's what I thought.
I'm going to be there to hang out.
Oh, yeah, we're hanging. I got the after party going already, guys. So anyway, all right. Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.